Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. How are you?
I'm okay. How's it going?
God's going pretty well, although today you might add Grinch to my list because I'm a little concerned that with today's topic, people might instantly assume I'm a Grinchy type of person. And I'm hoping that she'll stay with me on that and hear my argument all the way through before you decide whether or not I've just lost the holiday spirit.
Okay, well, I've known you long enough, I think. How many years have you been doing this?
7 years.
Yeah, I think I can safely say that I don't look at you as a Grinch.
You haven't seen my Grinchy side.
I have not seen the Grinchy side.
That's good. Well, then I'm going to take a stab at it because I think that it's important to talk about charity at this time of year and giving because there is so much need out in the community and in the world in general, and that we are being called on all the time to give of ourselves. I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but we have Black Friday, and then we have Cyber Monday. When I found out, like Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and then Tuesday is Giving Tuesday. Of course, that was last week, so I missed it by a week. But it's what got me thinking about this whole idea of giving and charity and why we give and why it's important. And I just kept going back to this discomfort I have with big buckets of toys, toy drives in general, that I have always been a bit uncomfortable with this idea of gathering buckets and buckets of toys and distributing them to children and feeling as if, you know, that really is going to make a huge difference. And I think that there are better ways that we could share the holiday spirit other than grabbing a toy, an unwrapped gift, and throwing it in a bucket. You know, not that it's inherently bad, and I think the organizations that put together these toy drives are inherently good and trying to do something because it is better to do something than to sit back and do nothing at all. But I think if we really thought about what is going to bring the most value to someone who's struggling, who's in need, who needs a hand, a lift up, that there are better ways we could do it. And they'd be in some ways more profound and long lasting than the toy drive idea, than throwing the gift. You know, and again, I'm not trying to be Grinchy, but I really struggle with this mixed message that we send, right? Because a lot of us are trying to battle the commercialism of the holiday season. I mean, 1/4 of all of our personal spending happens at this time of year. You know, it is the biggest shopping season. And with all of the commercialism and all of the noise and all of the messages that, you know, we need to give and exchange presents, and so many people are trying to pull back and say it has to be about more than the gifts, right? It has to be about more than excessive spending. And so we're trying in our own personal lives to cut back on the materialism of this part of the year. And yet we use this time of the year to give by giving materialistic things like toys. And so I struggle with that. I think it's a mixed message to say to anyone, you know, here are these toys. These will make you feel good about yourself because our well-being, our status, our sense of worth is wrapped up in those things we have in stuff. And I don't think that mixed message is helpful. I don't think that propagating this idea that stuff in some way is going to give us a sense of happiness and well-being is a healthy thing. And then as I'm saying that, I'm picturing, you know, what you're picturing is this little girl who's, you know, never had a doll in her life. And I'm saying now don't give her a doll and, you know, she'll just carry around a corn cob. I mean, I'm not picturing this because I don't know if the need is such that every child who not wants a toy is not going to get a toy if we stop giving into toy buckets. Okay, let me side note with a little story as to why. So I worked for social services for a long time and worked with an at-risk program. And every year is the most generous. And I think this is when I started getting my developing my discomfort with the whole idea of the toy drives and angels and buying gifts, because our families at the center received an incredible amount of Christmas love. We had everything from bicycles to stereos. I mean, really high-end, fabulous gifts. We were not, you know, grabbing things from the dollar store. These were some beautiful gifts. then some of the parents in our center were getting the same amount of gifts from multiple agencies that they were connected to. You know, so for the families that were really connected to social services, they were gifted at Christmas in ways that my children were never gifted. I mean, much nicer halls of Christmas. And I remember the parents be backing their cars up to the center so they could load everything they got into the car. And I just kept thinking, you know, what is this that we're doing? That this idea that if we, the more these kids get in gifts, the less they'll understand how underprivileged they are, or if we can fill up their home with plastics and technology and things that are going to break quickly and end up in the landfill, that somehow they'll be better people for that. I mean, it really started to bother me. And then I also started to recognize that for all of the people that are in the system who are connected to these toy drives and are gifted some fabulous Christmas gifts, there are as many, if not more, people who go unseen, who aren't connected to agencies, who aren't connected to these ways of getting things around the holidays for their family, whether it be food or toys. And it's the unseen need that concerns me the most, that if we just focus our attention on these kind of high profile, throw a toy in a bucket kind of campaigns, or we pick a name off a tree and we encourage our kids to pick out a toy for that child, that we're still not meeting the needs of all those who go unseen on a daily basis, who you wouldn't know by looking at them how underprivileged they are, or what they're going without, or if they're hungry, or if they don't have someone to spend time with. And so I guess what I'm talking about is finding different ways to meet the needs of those who are struggling. And one of the things I would encourage us talking about today are trying to find gifts of value, of longer lasting value, of instead of buying that toy, take that $20 and donate it towards a campership so a child who couldn't afford to go to summer camp is able to go, or for a child to get lessons playing the guitar or the drums or some sort of musical activity to pay for a series of lessons for a child in the women's shelter who doesn't have access to learning something. To take your money and have it go towards an experience or an event that's going to change a child's trajectory for the rest of their lives, instead of in that moment with a materialistic item that's more than likely going to get broken or lost, right, or thrown into the landfill within the next few months. There is not the long-lasting benefit of our money or our time going towards an experience. And then the other thing I want to throw out there is this idea of person-to-person charity, you know, doing something with someone, giving of our time instead of stuff as a way of really making a long-lasting impact. So that's kind of where I'm at today as far as this kind of holiday spirit and the ideal that we want to give as much as we can. And so I guess there's a couple things I'm throwing out for you today. One, how do you give during the holidays, and do you? And what do you think of this idea of switching from, you know, throwing toys in a bucket or grabbing an angel off a tree and doing something that's either time-based, where you go and spend time with someone who's alone or shut in or doesn't have someone at home. Maybe there's a young person that you know who lost a parent or is alone, or the parent is overwhelmed and working really hard and could use an hour break for themselves. You know, what about that one-on-one kind of charitable activity, things that are long-lasting? Because again, if we're talking about mental health and well-being, one of the greatest foundations of mental health and well-being is feeling connected to others and to the world. And for people that are marginalized outside of the mainstream society, whether they're spending time in a transitional home at, away from their family, or if they are a young person who is struggling with health issues, or they're a family that is lacking employment or lacking housing, how do we connect individually with these people to help them feel more connected to the community? All right, 805-781-3875. I'm interested to know what you think about these things. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. As always, I invite you to join the conversation by calling in, or you can connect on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, through email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can podcast. You can get us weekly through iTunes by looking for The Reluctant Therapist. 805- 405-781-3875. Jasmine, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, I love that you are bringing up this idea and this topic. I think that for people it's really, you know, it gives them a warm fuzzy to grab an angel off the tree and, you know, pick out what this 16-year-old little girl, you know, put on her list or something. But like you said, you know, if you've ever been on the other side of these toy drives, you see these kids and these families getting so much, for lack of a better word, junk. Mm-hmm. That's not going to help them long term. And one of the things that I think I wish more charities did is you kind of see this coming around for wedding gifts. You know, people saying, hey, donate to this charity instead of giving us a gift. Mm-hmm. It would be great if our local charity said, hey, you know, we're not doing a toy drive this year, but maybe everyone in your office who is going to get a $10 toy anyways wants to contribute to helping, like you said, Johnny go to space camp or mm-hmm. to Sarah to play the violin. You know, those kinds of things that are going to last longer than just the fourth quarter.
And you could crowdsource it. I love that idea that the companies could crowdsource their own sponsorship of a family or a young person.
Definitely. And then you also mentioned, you know, doing something of your time. I know the Family Care Network, they have a holiday event for their families, and they ask people to come and donate their time by a craft that they can do with the kids. Mm-hmm. And I participated in this before, and it's some people, you know, maybe there's like a crafter, and they bring stuff for kids to make holiday cards. And I know one year I did making like Christmas trees out of ice cream cones, just something that the kids could do with their siblings and their parents were there. And, you know, it was more of an experience. Mm-hmm. And I think you're absolutely right, this idea that we're trying to go towards less waste, less junk, less stuff. But then come December 1st, we're like, stuff. And, oh, by the way, I want to make sure my neighbor has stuff. It's a cycle we have to get out of.
Well, and I appreciate bringing up those ideas because it is, to me, it is about the time factor, that reaching out. And, you know, we're also, we're in a time of our world where tolerance is much needed, right? And mm-hmm. seeing each other as humans and spending the time talking to strangers so that they're no longer strangers. Because to me, that's what the whole idea of this season is taking
Definitely.
The time to slow down and look around us and see who's in need. Because, you know, if we take a moment to take stock of our lives and realize how good our lives generally are in many ways, then we can reach out beyond our own life and start looking for people who are in need or looking for people who are strangers to us or who we might have judgment about, and to drop that judgment.
Once you start looking for it, you find it.
Mm-hmm.
You find it. And, you know, just the thought of, you know, tossing some change, you know, in a bucket at the Salvation Army, not that that's not great, or, you know, like you said, dropping off a toy in the bin, I think you hit it. If you look for that connection, because the season is about showing care and love, you know, how much love are you really giving to this child or to this person by making this donation, rather than giving of your time, trying to get to know them, trying to support them for more than just a day.
I agree. Jasmine, thank you for taking the time to call.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I started off the top of the show saying I may sound a bit grinchy, but I am anti-toy drive campaigns. And there are two main reasons. One is that I hate spreading this idea that material goods equate to happiness and well-being, when we know from a therapeutic standpoint that what people need is our time and our interest in them more than our stuff. And it doesn't have to be a long time, and it doesn't have to be, you know, every day, but to take the time to speak with someone who you wouldn't necessarily speak to ask them how their day is, you know, to buy them a cup of coffee. But also for young people, if we're talking about making the world a better place, we have to expose young people to the world in a greater way, right? We have to expose young people to nature and to each other and to activities and to the arts so that they will grow up with a greater sense of care and wonder about the world. So what do you think? Am I on the right track or am I way off base? 805-781-3875. Allie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, what a great conversation. So I'm with the Boys and Girls Club of South San Luis Obispo, and we have a dedicated teen center in Oceano. And we actually have a giving tree at one of the local banks, but all of our little tags on the tree are more about relative items that we need for the club, and then most importantly, scholarships. so that our young people can be a member here. So we have membership for grades 7 through 12, and it's only $50 for a school year, but even that is a hardship. And right now about 90% of our club members are scholarshiped. So just being able to come in the doors and have that paid for would be a great gift for our families out here in the Oceano Grover Beach area.
So, Allie, if someone wanted to provide a scholarship for a young person to join the Boys and Girls Club, how would they do that?
Well, there's two easy ways to do it. Of course, our website is the easiest, which is bgcslo.org. There's a Donate Now button on the homepage, or they could give us a call or come by our clubhouse. We're happy to do that. And then, you know, more importantly, when you talk about the experiences, you know, we're short staffed here, so we love it when we have people from the community that have expertise in teaching, you know, whether it's arts or woodworking, and they want to come and work with our young people and teach them a craft. We love to have that kind of specialized experience come out to the clubhouse and give them some hands-on teaching opportunities.
And Allie, what's a number that they could reach you at?
Yeah, it's area code 805-481-7339.
7339. And I love the idea of people, of mentors coming out and actually spending time sharing their gifts and their skills with the young people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we rely on here at the Boys and Girls Club, because we don't have enough staff to do that. So we really rely on the community partnerships, and there are a lot of talented people out here on the Central Coast.
Yes, there are. And Allie, just for out of interest, how many young people do you serve currently?
So we have three sites, two school-age programs that we work with, the elementaries, and then our teen center. So, I mean, accumulatively, you know, 400 to 500 youth, but specifically we have a need right now at the teen center, and our membership is at about 30 young people. That's junior high to high, and we'd love to be able to increase that number.
Great. And so anyone who's interested in being a part of the Boys and Girls Club or giving of themselves either through time or a scholarship, you can contact Allie, 481-7339, or at their website, if I have it correctly, Allie, bgcslo.org.
That's correct.
All right.
.org, yeah.
Thank you for calling in. Have a great day.
You too.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 781-3875. Where are the needs in our community for our time and efforts? How can we make the most of our charitable hearts? Because I know you have a huge charitable heart. You know, as a country, we give over, what was it, $358 billion in 2014. So we are a charitable group of human beings. But how can we make the most out of our charitable selves? And how can we do the most good for the most people? Or am I way off base? 781-3875. Ken, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. Ken Miles here from Campfire, Central Coast.
Oh, hi, Ken. How are you?
Just fine, thank you. You know, I think you're really on to something. I know as a parent, for me, it was always about giving my children experiences above toys and gifts. So we would always plan a vacation around the winter time, go to the Grand Canyon or do something exciting like that. And we found that experiences outlived the doll that we ever gave them. I don't even know if they remember a doll that we ever gave them, but they certainly remember our outdoor adventures and our trips. And Campfire, that's the same type of thing that we offer kids throughout our community, is experiences of a lifetime through our children's leadership programs, youth leadership programs, and our camping programs.
And so if someone wanted to help a young person access, I know Camp Natoma is your summer camp, how would they best help? How could they spend their time or their money with you?
Well, there's several ways, actually. I think usually the person who gives of their time, they too reap a similar experience that the children receive. So having volunteers at our Camp Takaniko, which is the first day summer camp in Arroyo Grande, is a great experience for an adult to give of their time through crafting and bringing their skills and sharing it with children of all ages. And, of course, Camp Natoma is really one of the ultimate experiences on the Central Coast. It's our remote campsite up in Paso Robles that have creeks run year-round and ponds to swim in. It's just one of the most beautiful spots in the area, and allowing a child to go there is truly a gift beyond one's ability to give. Each year we send at least 15 kids from the shelters, local shelters, to the camp through camperships. And so camperships is a huge way to give to children in need, or even families who are just, you know, might have four children, and sending four kids to camp is quite an overwhelming expense to cover. So through camperships and volunteering at our campsites and mentoring a child is probably that one of the best gifts you could give.
So how does someone contact Camp Fire? Website, phone number?
Yeah. I think phone numbers is always a good one. That's 773-5126.
Okay.
Or you can give online at campfirecentralcoast.org.
Great. And I do know that you have, for years and years, Camp Fire has sent children from the shelters in South County, or actually in Santa Barbara County and San Luis Obispo County. But also as you mentioned, I think this is also important, is that for those who are middle income or middle or lower income who do have multiple children are struggling, that there is help for those families also. Because I think quite often we focus on those who are in the greatest need who have nothing, but quite often it's the working families who are equally as struggling to be able to provide extras for their children, like camping or lessons. And that I worry sometimes that we lose a lot of our working class families because they're just barely hanging on, but their kids kind of get lost in the shuffle because they can't do the activities. So a campership towards a working family would be equally as loved as for those kids.
Absolutely. And, you know, the camping is just a unique learning environment. And if a child can do this self-discovery and learn a little bit about themselves, either it's nature or a unique social environment where they're living with a group of families and kids and our college counselors, 724 for a seven-day camp, it's just one of those experiences you don't ever forget. And so a campership, and even a campership, would just be a huge thing for our children and our youth.
So another opportunity. Ken, thank you so much for taking the time to call and representing Camp Fire Central Coast.
You bet, Elizabeth. Thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. 805-781-3875. I love hearing from our local nonprofits. And if you're part of a nonprofit and would like to encourage people and to give to your group, call us. Let us know what those opportunities are, because the fact is we are a giving culture and people are looking for ways to make the biggest and greatest impact. And if it's over the holiday season, we're taking this time to slow down and look around and see who needs our love. And if we believe that it's children that need our love at this time, there are great ways to help engage children in a lifetime activity that will carry them through. If they learn a sport and it gives them an opportunity to socialize with other children on a team, you know, being able to pay for AYSO or swimming lessons can be cost prohibitive for a lot of working families. And as I said at the top of the show, you know, we do really well for our families that are at risk and are identified by the county as being at risk. Where we don't do so well is for all the people who are below the radar, who aren't recognized by county services, who aren't receiving any sort of aid, and so they therefore are not able to get access to these Christmas giveaways. And so we end up gifting a small portion of our population in kind of obscene ways, and then missing a grander part of our population that we could help in profound ways. And so I wonder what you think about this idea. What is the holiday season about for you anyway? How do you and your family honor the spirit of giving at this time of year? 805-781-3875. Monica, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. This is Monica Grant. I'm the CEO of the San Luis Obispo County YMCA, and I'm also involved in the local chapter of the Association of Fundraising Professionals. So love this topic, love talking about philanthropy, and, you know, at the YMCA, like many of my friends that phoned in, we provide a lot of opportunities for people to support families. We do that year-round, and we definitely encourage year-end giving for that purpose. So pretty much any program at the YMCA, individuals and families can apply for financial assistance if needed. And I really appreciated your comment about, you know, working-class families and the working poor in our community, in that families have several kids, you know, activities can just be prohibitive. So we definitely take that into account when we're dealing with families who have, you know, multiple children, and we look at their circumstances, and it's our practice to help every family possible.
So can you tell me about some of the programs that YMCA offers and how people could directly, because I think there's the reason that the toy drives feel so good is that you're getting an actual item. So so how could people give in a way that they know they've done an
Love to give my perspective on the drives as well, but I would say that we have programs from preschool, after school, you know, camps, out-of-school camps that are holiday camps. We have big winter camps coming up, and we're countywide, so we have multiple sites, you know, 10 different sites in the summer. After-school program at 12 after-school sites. Huge youth sports program. We have a very active senior population, and so we do have some seniors who are on financial assistance because they're members here at our YMCA. So, you know, it really depends on, we try to work with donors on how they want to give and what feeds them. And for some people, it's not giving to youth, it's giving to seniors or giving to a specific type of family, you know, so we try to target their giving when possible. But I wanted to give you a perspective on the drives as well, and not just toy drives. We do a tree here as well, but I think we take a slightly different approach in that we work with our site directors who, you know their families and they know their circumstances. A lot of the requests are, you know, not for toys. Therefore, there was this one family that, you know, my spouse got involved with helping, and the little girl wanted a pair of shoes. You know, and that was a very basic request, but that really was something she needed. So I totally appreciate what you're saying about the aspects of some toy drives, but I think there's a way to do those kinds of drives that might be more relevant to get to what some of the aspects you're talking about. And I think, too, the other side of that for us at the Y is that we are very much about creating community. And so for, let's say, a senior member who doesn't have family or is far away from their family to feel some connection to a family by getting them that pair of shoes really does kind of create some community as well.
So for those who might not be familiar with the YMCA, because I think we all know the YMCA by name or by song, right?
Mm-hmm.
but can you talk a little bit about what the YMCA's mission statement is and why it exists in our community and the idea of how? Because
absolutely.
I'm thinking of a lot of people who are alienated and that I hear from often, you know, who don't feel connected to any sort of community. And so I would love to know more about
the YMCA. Yeah, no, I love the question. So the Y, you know, we are here countywide, but we're a national and a worldwide organization. We go by the Y. That's our branding now. And, you know, the three areas that the Y focuses on is, you know, supporting healthy living, youth development, and social responsibility. So all of our programs fall under those areas. And it really is about, for a child, how are we, you know, developing their assets? How are we building self-confidence? How are we helping them to develop in a healthy way? We've gotten very involved in healthy eating and physical activity programming for kids because we care deeply about children's health and family health. You know, so I think these themes extend to all of our programs, and people do get involved with the Y because of that community connection. So, you know, we don't want to be just any fitness facility. That's not who we are. We're a cause, and people to join the Y to be a part of their community. And it's very much a difference, and we focus on curriculum in our facility that's about chronic disease prevention. So, great place to be.
So someone, and again, I'm sorry I don't know all the details, but
yeah.
when you talk about joining the Y, so it's sounding like when Allie was talking about the Boys and Girls Club, where the kids join the Boys and Girls Club and they have a membership and they can participate in activities. Is the Y similar, that people join the Y and they have access to all of these activities?
Sure. Well, there's program members, and that you join, you know, to become, to be a part of a specific program.
Okay.
And then we have one fitness facility here down in SLO, and that people join the, you know, the YMCA fitness membership. And so that's a different type of membership, but they're all Y members in some capacity. So basically, you know, the best ways, if people want to give, they can explore on our website, which is slowymca.org, or they can call the Y. Basically, you know, I would suggest just, we have a fund for financial assistance. We granted over $125,000 in financial assistance last year, which is pretty significant, I think. And so any dollars that are contributed to that, we have a process where families, you know, apply for assistance, and it's based on, we grant it out based on their circumstances and their need.
And so my last question is this, Monica, and I wish I had remembered to ask Ken and Allie, is if people want to feel connected. You talked about your spouse, you know, wanting to get the shoes specifically for the little girl, that we want to feel connected to those we're caring for. And is there any sort of way of connecting those who want to support, you know, a young person doing, getting involved in the Y, and connecting them, you know, be able to say, I'd like to, you know, send this child to camp and I'd like to know that child and hear how they're doing. I mean, do we have avenues for making it more personal?
Well, we do. I mean, we obviously have to be careful about how we do that because, you know, we protect our children.
Right.
But there are, you know, we do that through more anonymous ways. For example, the site directors can report back if somebody wants to know how is the child doing. And we don't give out sensitive information about, you know, the child's name or contact information. That's not something we're comfortable doing.
I understand.
But certainly a staff member can talk about, you know, I see this child, you know, they were, you know, and then just in more general ways talk about that child. So, again, we have to be careful about how we handle that, but I think there are ways to talk about the impact that donors, you know, dollars did by talking about, for example, we have a lot of teen programs. I didn't even talk about those. So if somebody wants to scholarship a teen to go to Sacramento for our youth and government program, we can report back on, you know, the delegation's experiences, and we can get, you know, quotes from the people that participated. And often, if a teen, you know, we don't require families who received assistance to do testimonials, but if they want to share that, we're absolutely happy to share that with our members and donors.
Well, Monica, I appreciate you taking the time to call.
Absolutely.
And I'm
thanks
so excited
for the opportunity.
I'm so excited that, you know, that we've heard from multiple groups talking about this way, these ways to make long-term impacts. And I'm imagining that if someone, you know, was choosing between buying a $10 doll and wanting to give a $10 gift, that their $10 gift would be added on to other $10 gifts that would add up to something really significant.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you remember that?
No, a lot of our gifts are very small gifts, but it adds up to $125,000 in last year, so it was great.
Fantastic. Thank you, Monica. Enjoy
your
time. Days. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We are talking about the giving spirit around the holiday season. And I started off the show not wanting to be grinchy, but just letting you know that I really struggle with the whole idea of drives, especially toy drives. This idea that if we throw a toy in a bucket, that somehow that's going to change the life of a young person. And trying to challenge our idea of what giving is and asking that we might try to expand this idea of charity at this time of year and try to make it more personal. And I understand, I appreciate what Monica was saying, that we're not going to try to connect people and, you know, and compromise children in any way. But I'm talking about personal one-on-one giving of our time with other people. And maybe it's not, you know, maybe it's your next door neighbor. Maybe you know of a friend that's struggling right now and could use an afternoon out and a cup of coffee. You know, that's going to have a much much more long-term impact than a doll in a bucket. And then I'm trying to encourage you to think of ways to give outside of the box of yourself. And not everyone has the extra time, but we all have small creative ways that we can change the life of another person, whether it's a senior citizen or a young child or a teen. And it's interesting because we've heard a lot about our teens and the ways that they're struggling. And so I encourage you to think about that, and I'd love to hear from you. What are ways that you imagine you might be able to make a difference over this holiday season, one step beyond the toy in the bucket? And what is the meaning of this time of year for you anyway? 805-781-3875. I'll be back to take your calls.
You're listening to A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist here on Public Radio KCBX. The number to call today is 805-781-3875.
So, you know, when I was growing up, we didn't have like a traditional giving hobby in my family. Like, we didn't go serve meals to the homeless. So we didn't have like a specific thing we did as a family. And I know, you know, years later that one of those things that has the most profound effect on young people giving in their lifetime is being exposed to giving when they're young, you know, being put in situations where they are either cleaning up a creek or serving the homeless or, you know, learning about service from a young age. But what my parents did do, which was really helpful and I think profoundly impacted my life and probably has a lot to do with who I am today, was that there were always extra people at our house, whether it was holidays or on weekends or just random times, that there were extra people either staying with us for a period of time or having dinner with us or spending the holidays with us. My dad and mom, and I can't remember who's saying it was, but our house was always in a state of guest readiness because you never quite knew who was going to show up. If my dad was going to bring someone home who needed, you know, a warm meal or was traveling through town or was feeling kind of lonely at that time. My parents are wonderful about stopping in and visiting people who are alone or have just gone through a crisis or a tragedy. My parents are those who always show up. They never forget someone who might be hurting at a certain time. They have friends that have been, you know, lost their spouses and moved into senior care facilities, and they'll go out of their way to make sure they go visit and go see them. And so I think that their modeling of active care for others, personal giving one-on-one, is probably what has influenced me the most in the career that I have and also in my perspective, I guess, of what goes on at this time of year around the holiday season about how we can make the most of our love for others. And as I mentioned before, because I think we lose sight of what the holiday season is all about, what this time of year, whether it's Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas, winter festivals, solstice, you know, however we see this time of year, what the impact is. For me, it's the time of year that I get to put my pajamas on at 4:30 and curl up and just hunker down. It's my favorite time of year. I think I must be a hibernator by nature. I don't know. But however we honor this time where we slow down, right? Our days are shorter. We're much more quiet. We're probably, you know, bundled up with our friends and family more, having those deep conversations that seem to happen when it gets darker earlier. And however you honor this time of year, I think one of the things that's most important about this time is to look around and acknowledge what parts of our life are going well. To be able to honor the abundance in our life, no matter how little that abundance may seem at the time or the tragedies we might endure, to be able to find those pieces of abundance so that in turn you can look out at the greater world around you and start looking at ways that you can share your love in yourself, right? It doesn't have to be financial love, but it can be a smile or a conversation with someone. Because I also... I've been thinking a lot about this idea of tolerance and how do we learn to be kind to those around us and to not act upon strangers with fear, because if we, you know, act upon all others that we don't know with fear, we're never going to have any sense of unity or calm. So this is a great time of year to start having conversations with strangers, because as soon as we know someone, they're no longer a stranger and we no longer really have that fear. 805-781-3875. What are your thoughts around this time of year and giving? Pearl, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you. This is Pearl Munich, and I wanted to actually put in a word for the toy programs.
Okay.
Because the purpose of these programs is that when a child doesn't get Christmas presents and they see all the other children around them getting Christmas presents, they become ashamed. And that's a bad experience, you know, and if a child is poor, you know, it's one more bad experience that wears them down. But also, they children, if they perceive that they are not loved, will blame themselves. They think it's their fault, that they were not worthy, that they weren't good enough. And so we want to avoid that, and that is the purpose of the toy programs.
And I do, and I appreciate the heart in that, Pearl. I do, and I can appreciate wanting children to develop, you know, that sense of self-esteem and worth through feeling like they belong. But I do, you know, always want to caution that we want to make sure that we're getting those toys to those who, you know, who are in need, and not over-gifting a lot of children who, you know. I think sometimes, having spent a long time in social services, I think that's where our bottleneck sometimes happens, is that we miss a grand swath of children who aren't on the radar and who have great need, and we gift very generously a small portion. So I agree, we definitely need to help children feel loved, but I also in the long term hope that they're not just feeling loved because they're being given a gift, but they're feeling loved and feeling a sense of self-worth and self-esteem because people have spent some time with them, you know, teaching them how to fish or helping them learn to play the guitar or how to cook a pie, because a toy is a nice gesture, but really in the long term, what's going to have a lasting impact is if a child feels seen and feels witnessed and is listened to, that someone notices that they're there. That's really, I think, of equal value and maybe a longer term mental health benefit. I don't know, but I appreciate you calling in, because I do, as I said at the top, you know, tell me if I'm crazy. Where am I missing it on this? But I really do have a strong feeling. And I tell you, I walk into work today and I'm faced with a bucket. I mean, the buckets are everywhere. And so it's a constant reminder. And I think it takes more time and effort, you know, to look for ways to give directly to children. But if you look around, I know you know someone who could use a surprise gift certificate on their doorstep for something. And it might not even be a child. Maybe there's a neighbor who's had a really tough year and you could slide a gift certificate for some activity for the family or just for the individual. You know, look around for those people in your community that you could do a direct act of giving and love for. And as I said, it does take a little more time. It's much more, it's less risky to grab a gift anonymously and throw it in a bucket and walk away. And that is, we take less emotional risk that way. It takes more time and more opportunity to be a little vulnerable to try to do direct giving. But there are those ways through Boys and Girls Club and Campfire and YMCA and all of the other great youth organizations out there that you could change a long-term life by giving. I don't know. Love to know what you think. 805-781-3875. Marianne, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Holiday greetings, Grandmother.
Ah, thank you. You're the first person who's acknowledged that in the 3 weeks I've been using.
Oh, no.
So
I'm
thank
a grandma
you.
Of three, and they actually, when I had my first, when I had the first grandchild for my grandmother, I named her Grammy. And I thought, you know, she has that award, like on the TV show award. And now I've been designated as Grammy since my grandmother's passed.
It gets handed down to the good Grammys.
Now I'm Grammy. You know what I was thinking as you were sharing with your listeners was a tradition that we've done, and I know others have done also, but I think it's worth mentioning, is having the children of, you know, age probably 3 and up, you know, of a knowledgeable age, go through their clothing and their shoes and their toys that they've had in the last year from birthdays and Christmas and just because gifts, and then being able to have them part and parcel being active in that giving process and then wrapping them up or bagging them and dropping them off at like a Goodwill center or somewhere that employs people and then resells it to keep the community going strong.
Yeah, and I love that idea, too, of helping children to learn to minimize their collection of stuff and to not just keep it. And we had the same thing every year with our kids, that nothing new comes in until others go out.
Right.
And to be able to pass along. But I'm also curious, Marianne, as a grandma, like, what kind of activities do you enjoy doing with your grandchildren?
I think just the real grandmotherly, motherly things, because I feel more of as a mother than a grandmother. Just like the baking and the decorating and going to church. And it's funny because I have a really good Muslim friend who, you know, they don't celebrate Christmas in their tradition. But she made Christmas cards for all the employees of her husband's business and gave me one, actually made me a couple that I passed on to family members because we do celebrate. And I thought that was really neat. It kind of, stuff like that that bridges the gap, maybe going to a service, an interfaith service or something, and broadening the children's minds and opening their eyes, like you said, to a bigger community than just themselves and Santa and gifts.
Yeah, and I do, and I love that idea. Maybe that is a great family tradition if we move past just the giving to others, but to help expand the understanding of love for our children to go to different faith community services and to see what it's all about and to try to reduce fear and expand love. Because I just keep sticking to this theme of, you know, once someone is no longer a stranger, we will stop fear, right? If someone is a stranger, we fear them. Once someone is known to us, we can open our hearts with love.
Yeah, that's true. That does ring a sound bell of goodness. And my Muslim friend said this. I thought it was the cutest thing. She said, you know, I heard from someone, and whether it was Muslim, Christian, Jewish, or otherwise agnostic, they said they look at some good, upright Muslim families who practice peace and love and American values. They said in some aspects were more Christian, quote, than the Christians themselves. And being raised Christian in a Christian country, I had to agree with her.
Well, and I think, again, thank you, Marianne, for taking the time to call, that trying to expand our conversations with all people is maybe another part of what this time of year is all about. I'm talking about the charitable giving part of this time of year. You know, whether it's from our $10 donation, a food drive donation, a clothing drive donation, or if it's a large philanthropic donation of thousands of dollars, we tend to start thinking about it this time of year, trying to do the most good for, you know, the most people. And I guess, you know, I was curious to know if I'm the only one who thinks about, you know, moving beyond the gifting piece and trying to do more action pieces and maybe challenging families instead of doing gift exchanges to do direct donations in each other's names for scholarships or music lessons or art classes. Imagine how phenomenal that would be if you have a relative who plays an instrument and loves music and you make a $25 or $30 donation to help a child get music lessons in their name. What a beautiful gift that would be. Or if you're someone who does love music and you could volunteer some time at the Boys and Girls Club by contacting Allie and sharing your gifts with a young person. What a fabulous way of giving of yourself that costs you no money. Because for a lot of people, they don't have extra cash to give. They just have time and love. And to try to look at that direct one-on-one giving. So 805-781-3875. I'd love to hear what you think of this, or where your giving heart is at this time of year. And Jordan, I'm curious to know, because you've been looking and jumping in your chair throughout the program like you had something to say. So what is your take on this? And did you grow up, does your family have a giving tradition?
Well, I think that the jumping might have been me answering phone calls. But my family, when growing up, I did giving traditions and things like that with my parents and stuff. But one thing I keep thinking about is the giving dynamic, and that a lot of people in America are very wealthy and a lot of people have a lot, right? And those people are giving stuff to people based on what they think they want or what they think they need. And I do think it's important to give kids toys on Christmas sometimes, because if you don't have a toy, like that one caller said, you know, you might not feel worthy. Mm-hmm. But I think that we should examine our giving dynamics and think to those who we're giving, we should ask them, you know, what they want instead of us imposing what we think they want.
And I think that's why I think Monica was talking about, you know, the giving trees that have specific, and I think even Ali talked about it, that specific requests that a young person, you know, wanting shoes or asking for. Maybe that's the other way that I should approach this, that if you are a family in need, and, you know, whether you're working class or middle class or, you know, working poor, I mean, need is great all over this county and this country. And to be able to say specifically, you know, I would love my child to be able to go to camp or take music lessons or take an art class, and to use those as our needs drive, and hanging those on the tree would be a more specific or need driven way to give. And I'm all about that. I get that. And I appreciate you mentioning that, Jordan, because I don't want it to sound like I'm a complete Grinch about any sort of toy drives or giving drives, because I'm absolutely not. You know, I believe fully in being charitable of ourselves in any way we can. I'm just wanting us to be very mindful about doing the most good with our own resources of time and money. And you know, before we close up today, I really want to make sure we address the needs of our seniors in our community also, because as a lot of you know, I've been spending time at the Bella Vista Transitional Care Center. And the more time that I'm there, the more I look around at all of these beautiful people, some elderly, some not, who really just need the gift of time. They really benefit from someone coming over and spending an hour hearing their story, maybe taking them out for a walk, or, you know, bringing some books, something, just the gift of time, because there's a lot of lonely people that we have shuffled off into the corners so that we don't have to deal with them or see them, and they're hurting. And so I think about that as often as I think about the direct giving. 805-781-3875. Julia, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Just briefly, my kids grew up serving Thanksgiving dinner and other ways of giving back to the community. And so as they've grown into adults, and my brother and parents were on board with this completely, without not giving each other gifts, but either each of us giving, as you said, direct donations to something that was meaningful, landmine removal or whatever. But last year, we have a family in our neighborhood. One of them was having a long-term battle with cancer. And I know that they were having a tough time financially. So instead of doing donations to agencies, we pulled money and gave them $200. We didn't know what for, to buy food or gifts or just something special for themselves. And they appreciated it, but it did not go over the way we thought it would. We were so pleased and excited by the response of our family members, but they ended up donating the entire amount to something else. And it's escaping me now, but it was something, I think, for girls' education.
Mm-hmm. So it was a very tender spot. I think my feelings were a little bit hurt, and I was really embarrassed, and I hope that I didn't embarrass them. So it's not always as straightforward as it seems.
Now, Julia, I so appreciate that, because I think that is important. And I think Jordan kind of brought that up, that we can't, you know, even if our hearts are so big, we can't assume that our giving is going to be what the people that we're trying to give to want or necessarily comfortable with. And I guess that's, you know, part of me was thinking about the anonymous sliding of, you know, a gift into the doorstep, or, you know, to make it not something that's a direct giving, so that the people have to feel maybe embarrassed about you knowing that they are in need at this time. Because I think it's a sensitive point, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because we would hate to, in our well-intended way, actually hurt someone and end up feeling hurt. So, Julia, thank you for the reminder. And Susan, you're on the air. You get the last word today.
Oh, I just thought people might want to look into a really cool organization here called the Central Coast Hour Exchange. If you're like an electrician or something like that, you could donate an hour or two to help a senior fix an electrical problem, or all kinds of different things. But Central Coast Hour Exchange, check it out.
Is that a website then?
It is. I can't say exactly what the website is. I am a member, but I'm not like a principal or anything. But you can look it up by its name, Central Coast Hour Exchange.
And I'm glad, again, you brought that up with the seniors, because there's a lot of seniors that aren't in transitional care or in home facilities, that they are still in their own homes and are also feeling equally alienated or detached from society or the community. And so I think it's wonderful that anytime we can help out. But how do the seniors get in, you know, how do people find the seniors for the Central Coast Hour Exchange? Do the seniors have to sign up, or how are they finding out about that?
Yes, the seniors sign up, and the people who have the gift of time or talent also sign up, and then they're matched up. Lots of people just like need a ride to the airport, or they need to have their animals looked after for a couple of days, or you know, and then there are other people who have something to offer. So they offer some kind of skill that they have. And then you just take an hour and give back an hour when you can. It's very cool.
Very fabulous. Thank you, Susan. Enjoy your day.
Thank you.
I love that, Jordan, don't you? Central Coast Hour Exchange. Because, and Julia did bring up a great point, that we do have to be careful that we don't make someone feel embarrassed or ashamed, even though we're trying to do something loving, that the giving of ourselves and time as money is a very sensitive subject as well. But I appreciate everyone's input today on this subject. You know, I started off trying not to sound like the Grinch and bashing just the toy drives, but trying to expand how we look at this time of year and our goals in giving, and to really think about what it is that we can share of ourselves, and to really encourage you to think about, again, how you can make the most impact, have the biggest amount of impact in someone else's life. And it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. I mean, if you find yourself with an extra hour, half hour every week, and you can find someone who you can share that time with, that will change the course of their lives. And imagine, again, it's that power of one, right? That if each one of us turned to another one and made their life a little better, it would encourage that person to turn and make someone else's life better. Because we start to get very insular, right? When we feel overwhelmed or busy or have too much on our plate and we can't give of our time to others. And then you notice everyone else is in their little bubble, too busy to give of others. But the minute you step out of your bubble and give of yourself to someone else, it inspires them to turn with that love to give to someone else. Because whenever our burden is lessened just a bit, we feel more magnanimous and more abundant, and therefore want to turn and give to others. So try to take that step out of how crazy and busy your life is at this moment and share your abundant self with another, and watch how that ripples out. And as always, I appreciate you supporting Public Radio KCBX and this show. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Please join us at kcbx.org. On our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, or podcast with us at iTunes. I look forward to speaking to you again next Tuesday at the same time.